like a tragic car accident where, say, like the body was dismembered in several different things, you know what I mean? And then you had a sloppy Joe sign next to it or something.
Ooh,
like
and his
that,
name was right? Joe.
Hilarious, you know what I mean? There's a lot
He's
of ways.
Advertising for sloppy Joes.
I think that I want to live in a world. I want to live in a world where sloppy joes are advertised everywhere. You don't.
That's big slop.
Yeah, big slop is fucking is coming back in a big way.
Welcome back to Show Me Yours podcast. My name is Jackie Agnew.
I'm Johnny DeVito.
And thanks for joining us again. If you're a repeat customer.
We love a repeat customer.
If this is your first time here, welcome.
Yeah, we love them too.
Yeah, this is a comedy podcast.
That it is.
Slash music podcast.
We get to it.
But don't hold your breath about the music portion.
No, we actually covered the Doppelgangers on a recent episode. Fantastic hip-hop group from California. If you haven't checked that episode out, I recommend the last 10 minutes when we get into a little bit of music there. Mm-hmm. So we actually got a like. You know what I mean? And a little, and a little comment or whatever from a group that, I respect so highly, and you wish that you would have done the album a better justice. I think that's the entire 130 some odd episodes of this show.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like, I'm sure that they'll be listening to every episode now that they're loyal followers and fans.
Absolutely. Right. Doppelgang. You know what I mean? We should wear cloaks and stuff like that too.
Right.
And have a lot of fun. I think we embrace the same stuff, but I think what we're going to get into today might actually revolve a little closer around the album in question.
Yeah.
I think the topic would be, I think Brainwash would be a good.
Sure, yeah. We have a fun album to get into. Another soundtrack. Been on a soundtrack kick lately, but it's going to be a fun discussion, and we will get into it a little bit earlier than the last 5 minutes.
You bet your booty and your biscuits.
But, of course, before that, we have, as always, some news to break. We know, like, this is where you get the hottest stories hot off the presses, and we're here to serve it up, a dish best served piping hot, actually.
Absolutely.
Unlike revenge.
Yes, this is not revenge. This is not vengeance. We've noticed that people on reality television shows do not know the actual sayings and how they go. So it's if this is a dish best served hot, then please serve it up.
Open up. Chugga chugga.
Spoon feed me, baby. Yeah. I'm hungry.
So this is an exciting first one that I think you'll enjoy. McDonald's is going to remove a quote tasteless sign after putting it opposite a crematorium. So we have another great example of journalistic writing here.
They gotta do this. Do you think when a young journalist sets out into school and they're gonna be covering, like the hard hitting facts, let's say like war coverage or politics and things like that, and they just end up like having to cover, a spicy, top 10. Sex toys of 2024.
I feel like it's a welcome reprieve, just be able to like really exercise that creative muscle and just like a fun, fun article.
Oh man, somebody should pay us to do this stuff. But anyway,
farticle?
Please. Farticle?
French fries? They're just a tasty side dish. The Big Mac? That just brings big joy. The McCrispy? Well, that's where our problem begins. Featuring a chicken breast fillet in a crispy, crunchy coating, the burger itself isn't an issue, but when you advertise anything crispy near an establishment responsible for putting deceased people into a huge furnace, it's hard not to make the connection.
So they've chosen the greatest location for advertisement, and we know that location is everything. So next to a sign that says crematorium.
It's not even like we'll put up a picture. It's that's not even like, it's just like, is next to a crematorium. And if you notice, you're like, oh, that's bad optics. It literally is. There's a big sign that says crematorium. And then right next to it, it says McCrispy.
What kind of town are we in where
it looks like a UK?
It does. It seems weird that like just a regular street sign would be like, you know, if this is the UK, like Brookshire, 5 kilometers, you know, things like that, like road attraction coming up, you know what I mean? And a few crematorium on your left. Like, that just seems like something that you wouldn't
for. It's not easy to see from the road.
Or how many bodies are they burning in the UK? Is that just like a common thing? You know what I mean?
Crematoriums are pretty common.
Are you going to the crematorium for maybe other things? If there's a slow day, you know, could you maybe, roast a rack of ribs?
Well, a crispy chicken sandwich, as it may seem.
Why not? And the McCrispy in its own sense is like, it's a little bit bigger than a McChicken. We don't necessarily need to get into that, actually. There's a little bit of minutia here, but it is a new menu item, and I don't think it lives up to the hype.
All right. So unfortunately, this connection wasn't considered when the advertisement for the McCrispy appeared on a bus stop directly opposite Penmount Crematorium in Cornwall. The sign is literally positioned behind another pointing to the crematorium, resulting in it being described as tasteless. One woman, whose mother-in-law was cremated at the establishment last year, told Cornwall Live, "Although I can see the funny side, it is tasteless, and I'm sure some grieving family members won't like to see it when visiting Penmount for the funeral and cremation of a loved one."
I mean, she's got a good spirit about it, you know what I mean? She's like, you know, I can see...
Yeah, but why is she weighing in on this? It was like her, whose mother-in-law was cremated there like a year ago, like, let's bring in fucking Susie and see her take on this. It's not like she goes back to this crematorium, you know?
Yeah, but I wonder if, like, the head of the crematorium, like the like Carl Crematoria, probably walks out here, and this is, like, an opportunity for him to be like, no, there's no, like, we go to dust. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We're well past crispy. There is a point during a cremation where crisp is probably achieved.
Right.
But you're going to push
past
that.
You're going well past that. Yeah. So it doesn't even, logically, it's not related at all. So the sign has received mixed reactions, with one person admitting that how funny it is will probably depend on how long you follow the crematorium sign wearing a black tie. Others couldn't get enough of the humorous side, though, with one responding, "fell off the chair laughing," while another couldn't resist saying, "I'm loving it." In spite of the...
I mean,
that's
you
a
gotta
great
do
joke.
It, right? Like,
yeah,
well, yeah,
you gotta, that's low-hanging fruit, and someone's gotta
it's obligatory,
yeah.
They'll actually pull your card if you don't say it.
Yeah, in spite of the partial backing, there's people backing this sign.
Sorry. I mean, you should, right? Like, if you want to fight for comedy or free speech or something like that, there's a lot of dorks
out like
there.
It's like the sign is running for office.
Sure.
In spite of the partial backing the sign has received, McDonald's has now said it will remove the sign. The company made clear it is taking the matter seriously. And when shown a photograph of the sign, a spokesperson said, "We were unaware of the road sign in the vicinity of this bus stop. However, in light of the concerns raised by Cornwall Live, we have asked for our advertisement to be removed." There have reportedly been rumors in the area that the advertisement would be replaced by a poster advertising Burger King's flame-grilled Whopper, though those claims haven't been substantiated and really just wouldn't be a good idea.
That would be awesome.
So it's unclear at the moment what will be put in its place, but I imagine some McNuggets or a McFlurry would be a much safer option.
I think that if you... like have the, you know, if a situation like this happens, then McDonald's is going to take a little bit of heat. But when you like advertise, I don't know how it works here, but like I have a hard time thinking that like an advertising person is affiliated with, you know, the McDonald's corporation saw this, you know, little chunk of planet Earth where they advertise across the entire globe and we should put this here.
No, like, I don't think it was like, I feel like they just have, you know, you can buy out certain ads on, this is clearly a bus stop or whatever.
Exactly.
And they're like, okay, we'll take, you know, however many, and they just I don't really know how it works either, but I don't think there's someone scouting out every single location with a McDonald's billboard being
now,
like, this is our spot.
This could be the work of like one, you know, genius. When I was a kid, I had a friend named Dustin who was a couple years older than me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was like the first kid to like get his own apartment, get his own job and all that stuff. Right. So one of his first shitty jobs was going around at night and putting up like new billboards and stuff like that. Right. So he kind of like wheat paste it. You get, like the way that he described
it. Seen it on sucked. Billboard Dad, Mary-Kate and Ashley movie.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. You're familiar with the billboard tactics?
Well, so quick sidebar. So in Billboard Dad, what Mary-Kate and Ashley do is that like their mom has passed away however many years ago. And,
tragic.
You know, they want their dad to get back on the market. Like he's had his time grieving and now they're like, you know, we want him to be happy.
Sure.
But he doesn't want to, you know, start dating. He just wants to focus on his like daughters and his work. And so what they do is they go on top of a billboard in the middle of the night and paste up a billboard of their dad being like, want to date this man? Call this number or whatever, or email this email. And so there's a nice scene of them like pasting on this billboard, these two like 12-year-old girls in the middle of the night. This
wild premise of a movie.
Yeah.
Trying to get your dad some trim. That's,
yeah.
Well,
and then
right
all
on.
these ladies start showing up for dates.
That's a great premise.
A lot of Dutch angles in that movie, actually. I rewatched it semi-recently and I was like, I don't know what they were trying to do with this camera work.
They got
but
a DOP
was,
with a little style in them. I like that. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
They're showing the imbalance in the family, right? There needs to be a matriarch to establish order. Then at the end it kind of straightens out.
I mean, stylistically speaking, I mean, if you are a film nerd, then I guess Billboard Dad, you know, really tells the story more visually than
anyone who's interested in the film industry and in like cinematography. It's a must watch
for sure. For sure. You have your Tarkovsky's and, you know, you mean you have your German I can't remember the Belgian guy that's really boring. Every movie is like fucking 5 hours long. Fuck that shit. Anyway, so what I'm saying here, sorry, back to the McCrispy sign, is that this might just be the work of one beauty. Like my buddy Dustin, given the opportunity, you know, might look in the back of the truck and be like, okay, I have, you know, X amount of signs or something like that, McCrispy crematorium. This might just be the work, you know, of one, you know,
rogue artist.
You know, minimum wage worker that's just like could putting up road advertisements and stuff like that, right? This could, you know, be one lowly servant's, you know, true mark of fame or whatever, right? How often do we all go viral and stuff? And he's kind of doing it in a Banksy-esque situation where nobody's come forward yet, which...
I have an interesting question, I guess. So imagine, put yourself in this situation.
Sure.
You're going to a funeral. You're going to a crematorium. And then when you're heading there...
I've been to a lot of funerals. None of them have ever been held at a crematorium.
They said that they have funerals here. Or a cremation.
Well,
it's weird.
I
think a few, like a handful of people go to the cremation, right? They need someone to be there.
Sure.
I don't think you're standing outside the fucking thing.
I mean, I've never been invited to that event. It's usually finger sandwiches and cocktails and stuff like that after the burial. But what I do think that any you know, fully equipped funeral home might have like an embalming room and a crematorium or something on the grounds.
Right. And so so in this situation, you know, you're wearing the black suit, you know, decked out in funeral attire. You're in the zone.
Oh, looking good.
And you pull up, you know, about to turn to the crematorium.
Yeah, who died in this hypothetical?
And, well, so that's where I'm getting
to. Oh, okay, cool.
And so you see this this picture that we're pulling up to here where it says sign for crematorium and then the McCrispy advertisement right behind it. And so I think it goes without saying,
as
like
a comedian, as comics, you and me are laughing.
So it's hilarious. But so my question is, what level of relation does it stop being funny? Because like, I feel like I'd still be laughing even if it was like my mom.
There's
who
nobody,
I was, you know, going to cremate. Like, I think I'd still be like,
I think that, like, the closer that you are, even not only the closer that you are to that person, the worse of the circumstances of the death would be. This would bring levity to any of those situations.
That's almost
for
like,
us.
Yeah, because it's like, even if it's like, this is a really, like, tough day for you, it's someone you're super close to, I think it would almost be more funny in that sense because, you know, this is a fucking rough day and your mind is just searching for something to break up, you know, the trauma that you're experiencing. So I think something like that would get a, you know, get a pop
you
in the car.
You need to do stuff like that. The first time that I met my dad's now wife. My grandparents drove me and my brother like kind of 4 hours west towards Vancouver. My dad kind of met us halfway. You know, they picked us up together. We all drove into town. And then a deer ran across the road and we fucking murked a deer in like a small Mazda car.
Ooh.
So very eventful. Right? Yeah. And Ellen was crying. Everybody's upset. And I dropped the line. Holy shit, we just killed Bambi. Very young kid murders in the car. Right.
Yeah. You've
murders mentioned
this
so
before.
Hard to the point that my brother takes credit for saying the line. It drives me fucking crazy. Anyway, regardless of the fact, I was also at a friend's funeral. And what had happened was we used to play this game called the Bicking Game, right? It's like about the, if you're, you know, any respectable person, then your lighter of choice is obviously going to be a Bic. And in high school, they called me the Notorious B.I.C. because I'd be out there just, you know, stealing
Bicking,
lighters, right?
Right.
Bicking hard. So then we had a game about, you know, there was probably four or five of us in it, who could Bic the most lighters in a month.
Right.
And it got out of hand. I didn't, I think I might have came like last place or maybe third or something like that, because my buddies went all out to the point where nobody would give us a lighter ever again.
Right.
And a buddy of mine had passed away, and we were sitting at, you know, outside the funeral, and everybody's kind of, you know, having darts. And I had a lighter in my pocket, and it was just a really somber moment. And I was in a circle full of people that would never give me a lighter. And I was just like, give me the lighter. And it was just this moment that kind of like broke the, you know what I mean? Right. Nobody's going to tell me to go fuck myself at this funeral or whatever. But like everybody, you know what I mean? So you can like lift, you know, the, like the tension or whatever, and nothing
of
would
course
do that better than a Mick Crispy sign next to a goddamn creepy
especially door. Like leading into the event, like it kind of again like break the tension. You'd be like, okay, like you know, I mean I think they should keep it there.
Well-timed fart at a funeral, legendary.
I think that this is actually doing more good than harm. And if you're like all up in your, I mean, then fucking look the other way.
That's what we get, you know, back to brainwashing, right? Like, how much, like, fault do you want to find in the world to make your day worse when you could look at this, which is objectively hilarious?
Yeah.
And, you know, or you can choose to see this as something that's just going to, you know, ruin an already bad day.
Right.
I think that, you know what I mean? That's that's the world getting to you. You know what I mean? Right. And you got to rise above.
So here's another question for you.
Sure.
Is Mick Crispy the funniest thing that could be there?
Not a chance. I really like flame grilled Whopper might be a little too wordy.
Yeah.
McCrispy might be the best.
McCrispy's good. I can't even.
Like, I mean, if you're going to go for like say there's like a concert coming to town, hot heat. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like
I mean,
that,
like
right?
If it was like a specific, say like your teenage son died and there's an advertisement for a teen burger.
Well, yeah, okay, so under given the certain specifics, then like absolutely you know, if you had you know, maybe like a tragic car accident where say like the body was dismembered in several different things, you know what I mean, and then you had a sloppy Joe sign next to it or something.
Ooh, and
like
his
that,
name
right?
was Joe.
Hilarious. You know what I mean? There's a lot
He's
of ways
advertising for sloppy Joes.
I think that I want to live in a world where sloppy joes are advertised everywhere. You don't.
That's Big Slop.
Yeah, Big Slop is fucking is coming back in a big way. I think if you could, you know what I mean, you know, really, really, really harness those flavors and elevate them in a Top Chef scenario, you can get fucked because a sloppy joe is perfect on its own.
Well, we actually just watched, spoiler alert, watched Manit Chauhan win her second TOC on a sloppy joe.
Congratulations. And internet, take it easy on Manit.
Yeah, I didn't know there was so much Manit hate out there.
The racism about a television chef.
Yeah, it's pretty insane.
Absolutely absurd. You know, you gotta respect a goat now, you would say, two-time TOC winner.
The only two-time TOC winner.
I mean, it's an incredible feat and a wonderful accomplishment. And I think the internet needs to chill the fuck out.
Yeah, if you don't like her, then you're probably racist, because there's nothing not to like.
Well, that's basically what it is. And I mean, my brother's wife has got to fucking get her shit together, man. But that's all I'll say about that.
But, yeah. So McCrispy I actually count me in as a backer of this sign because I think they should keep it. I think it brings some levity to an otherwise dark day. You know, elicits maybe the only laugh you'll get that day. You know, you need it.
I'll go one step further and say, like, if I was like a billionaire philanthropist and I would pay for McCrispy advertisements in next to every crematorium sign.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
From here to Timbuktu across the entire land.
Yeah.
There's nothing not great about this.
I'm surprised that McDonald's actually is taking it down. Like, I feel like a fucking multi-billion dollar corporation, they'd just be like, who the fuck cares? Let's move on with it. It's not like it's going to impact their sales.
Well, the world is brainwashed now because everybody, like, I mean, no matter how many billions or whatever they have, when the public turns on them or whatever, that they'll notice, you know what I mean, like a $1 billion drop or whatever in profits and things like that or whatever. So it's on like them to now tiptoe around what could have just been hilarious when they could have just shown their nuts.
Exactly, yeah, because you see, you always see, like, the screenshots of fucking, like, the Wendy's social media person on Twitter sometimes just, like, gets really unhinged, like, the kind of fast food businesses with kind of a ballsy social media approach is doing well these days. I mean, because it's like people love, you know, being trolled or whatever, or they find it funny and like in touch with like our generation and Gen Z's like kind of style of humor, I guess.
It is, and it's also just a disgusting fucking form of marketing or whatever, where it's like, okay, like we're gonna like it's an easy approach, and it always kind of like it always kind of gets me. I do like if they're like gonna go like back and forth at each other or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Like a Burger King or whatever. But then if you like look back, then like the same one company owns all the like.
Of course,
you know what I mean, right? So it's just another, you know, it's another scrub. It's another scrub for the brain.
Yeah,
wash me up.
All right, so we have another story. I mean, of course, you have all heard the O.J. Simpson passed away last week.
We lost a real one.
But did you know that on the day that O.J. Simpson died, Ford recalled thousands of Broncos? Yeah.
Oh, this is the news.
So in a you can't make it up scenario, Ford recalled tens of thousands of Bronco vehicles on the same day that O.J. Simpson was recalled from his earthly life.
And you're going to call me a conspiracy theorist?
Ah, that's hilarious. Recalled from his earthly life and passed away at the age of 76 following a blah, blah, blah. No one cares.
Battle with cancer.
Yeah, I mean, I don't.
Juice made it. Could you imagine? Could you imagine what that guy goes through every day and to still make it to the ripe old age of 76? I mean, an absolute figure. My childhood was like MJ, OJ, Y2K. That was like the childhood, you know what I mean, right?
Right.
So like they were just like larger than life figures, and also, you know what I mean, fantastic in the Naked Gun. you know what I mean? It's a storybook life. As far as like pop culture, you know what I mean, is concerned, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, an absolute icon. Nobody's gotten more hours of shit to talk about around the water cooler than Mr. you know, O.J. Simpson. He basically did it all, except for
that
remove
he did.
The head.
Ew. So 44,652 Bronco Sport and Escape vehicles were recalled on Wednesday due to possible cracked fuel injectors that could lead to a fire. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration announced yesterday. Ford says that the recall is mainly for vehicles that were manufactured in 2022 and 2023.
Could you imagine if they didn't do the recall and on the day of OJ's death, 10,000 Broncos burst
just
into flames?
Exploded.
That would be like if you're looking for a sign of the apocalypse, that would be that would be the one.
There were definitely no fuel shortages on June 17th, 1994, when O.J. Simpson led police on an hours-long low-speed chase in the infamous white Ford Bronco through the L.A. streets and 405 freeway before ultimately surrendering to authorities at his house.
It's like one of the most famous like traffic images other than like Tiananmen Square. You know
right.
what I mean? Like, it's insane.
Nearly every American, though, is old enough remembers exactly where they were when television channels broke into their programming to capture the police chase. Even the NBA 1994 NBA Finals between the New York Knicks and Houston Rockets was put in a mini box at the corner of the screen while the network took the live helicopter feed of OJ fleeing from police. In total, over 95 million people tuned in absolutely absurd numbers.
Do you think OJ fucked Patrick Ewing out of his only New York Knicks? I mean, the New York Knicks have been struggling for years. We hope they come back, but you know, maybe that would have been the reason why Patrick Ewing was so sweaty.
Right. So obviously they, for those who weren't aware, they had re-released the Bronco, in the last couple of years, and they do look pretty slick. I gotta say, like they look cool as fuck.
It's a newer version. They're a little bit more bubbly or whatever, right? Yeah. I would like them obviously to just like, you know, make the same one again.
But they're never going to do that.
No, it's never going to come back.
But yeah, this is just kind of like a fun coincidence. You know, when things just work out.
I mean, can you think of anything else like such, you know, so serendipitous, such a beautiful coincidence as Ford recalling 10,000 Broncos the day of O.J. Simpson's death?
For the day he was recalled from earthly life.
I mean, it's just one of those like fairy tale situations. Mm-hmm. I do think that... it's funny that they brought the Bronco back at all, because the Bronco is like famously
crazy. Yeah.
Not, you know, in production for years.
Yeah. And it's crazy that like obviously the Bronco is synonymous with OJ. Like you can't, like there's no one on earth who doesn't, you know, associate the two or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And it's so funny that nostalgia is a very, you know, hot commodity these days.
Fucking
and
right.
Ford was like, you know what we should bring back?
That is...
and it fucking worked.
Yeah,
tons
they were looking
of people
around. They were like, the Taurus? No.
Yeah.
We got something better than
like,
that.
Let's fucking kick it old school.
And they absolutely should have, right? And like the model of the vehicle or whatever was like, it fits a hole in their line of vehicles or whatever, which is absolutely perfect. But you know what? Stick to your guns, do what you know. And are you going to let, you know, one measly double homicide and a most famous police chase probably in history gonna, you know, stop you from making a fantastic vehicle?
One bad Bronco spoil 44,652 Broncos.
Not gonna let one bad Bronco spoil the bunch.
Exactly.
It's just not no that's not the way that we're gonna do it. If the glove fits, then you must acquit, and if you know, the Bronco shits the bed, then I guess you should recall it before fuel injectors explode and people burst into flames on the highway. But that being said, do you think that there's like, is there anything more coincidental than this? Like, I'm trying to think of any equivalent of this.
I mean, we could get back into 9/11, but I think 3 weeks in a row is pretty hardcore.
We're talking about brainwashing, and I was thinking about that, and I was like, if anybody's listened to 130 episodes of this shit, I'm the most brainwashed motherfucker.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Of all time. I can't get over my own bullshit, and a lot of it is just me just liking to hear my own voice, you know, which is crazy.
Yeah. That's a big one.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, right? And then, you know what I mean? When you hear it back, you just go, do I actually believe most of this shit? After so long, you know, you lose the joke and then you just kind of become, you know, a part of it, right? Mm. So if I'm a conspiracy theorist, you know, for believing maybe some of the things that I do, that might be the fact or whatever. But this is too delicious and coincidental for me to think that it is just that.
That is just a coincidence. So what is your theory, just off the top of your head? How do you think the two of these are connected in a sort of linear fashion?
My theory is that you want to create, what's the term? You manufacture obsolescence, I believe is the term.
Mm.
So OJ... knows, okay, so OJ is battling cancer or whatever. Not a lot of people know that, but the Ford Motor Company definitely has people on the inside, right?
Of course, if anyone knows, it's Ford.
Right? Ford is the only reason OJ is still alive at this fucking point. You know
right.
what I mean? So basically what you do is to manufacture obsolescence, and you know the Bronco is not selling. So what they can do is pull 44,000 Broncos off the road for a suspected cracked fuel injector. Mm-hmm. And then what you do is you kill OJ.
Oh.
And then the rise for demand in Broncos comes out because there's 44,000 less off the street. Then market prices go up, right? They're saying this is all inflation, but this is just corporate greed, right? You're price gouging. That's the reason why Walmart, you know, sales and things like that are through the roof. Loblaws is making more money than they've ever made and stuff like that. You want to call it inflation? We're just paying more for bacon. They're making more money.
Right.
You know what I mean? So if I'm going to sit here and just accept the fact that 44,652 Broncos just went off the market the day that the most famous Bronco driver in history
not even went off the market, were rescinded from their owners.
And there's nothing to be said that any of these things are going to be worked on, right? They could just be sitting in a massive parking lot or whatever, waiting for a six-month rollout, and then now you've created this demand for it, and people are going to pre-order and blah, 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 and you're going to, you know what I mean? That the fact that people are going to be waiting for it and not having them for so long is probably going to get other people, shout out to Ravi Khanna, buying a fucking Tesla truck or whatever for for the same reasons.
Yeah.
Brainwash.
Yeah, I mean, our friend, a friend of the podcast, we've had two episodes with him, Ravi. He is, you know, the epitome of being brainwashed by marketing tactics. I mean, any, like, adopter of new technology to a fault.
100%.
To the point where he's spending fucking thousands of dollars on the ugliest fucking truck I've ever seen life that doesn't even function as a truck.
He also sells cell phones so that he could, like, probably, well, I mean, I'm sure to pay the bills or whatever, but I think to keep up with that technology.
Of course,
and shout out to him for hooking us up with, the new iPhones when they do drop or whatever. Yeah. So there is some, you know, some positives to this thing or whatever, right? But you're always going to have these people that are trying to get on, you know, and follow these trends, that Yeezy buying motherfucker.
Yeah. Our cat right now.
We got a kitty doing weird stuff.
But following your theory, because I'm wondering now, like, who gave this intel? Because I don't think, I was not aware that he had cancer. No one that I've spoken to was aware that he had cancer. So I'm not sure if it was public knowledge, which leads me to wonder who released this information that this death was following a battle with cancer. Well, presumably a family member or a close confidant of some sort, which then leads me to believe that this person is working in conjunction with Ford, which kind of is like a full circle situation. Perhaps this is a person that, you know, pretended for all these years to take OJ's side, but in the back of their mind they're like, one day this guy's gonna get what's coming to him, and this whole, you know, and they've been working hand in hand with Ford to give him what he's got.
Babe, finally. Finally, now we're getting to it. It took 134 episodes, and you're finally fucking getting it. Outstanding work. Outstanding. If somebody is, from what I understand, OJ, I don't know if it was lung cancer, but he kept it pretty close to the chest. Hey, yo. Either way, so nobody really knew that he was kind of battling cancer.
Right.
Also, very interestingly, just thinking about this right now, Norm, who famously made so much fun of OJ, also kept his cancer, you know, to himself, right?
Yeah, interesting.
Is Norm and OJ on an island with Tupac and Bigfoot? They could be. I'm not here to say no.
I mean, anything is possible at this point. We're just trying to get the facts sorted.
At this point, too, right? OJ is at the twilight, you know what I mean, of his life and of his career, too. So, like, I mean, nobody's seen the body, right?
Presumably. I mean, maybe he's getting McCrisped.
I'm thinking, well, he could be McCrisped, or he could just take the payout, go to the island, you know what I mean, and you're fine. Now you're hanging out with Bigfoot, now you're hanging out with Tupac, now you're doing other shit, right? Because Tupac, you know, leaving, you know, I would say, like, the world as we know it, you know what I mean, to go off, you know, on his adventures, happened in 1996. So I'm sure he would be stoked that the juice, you know, came out. He probably, I don't even know if the trial was finished at that time or whatever, right?
Right.
Like, Tupac Robert doesn't even have the news. He's going to see juice come around the corner as, like, one of the greatest professional football players of all time, ran 2,000 yards in 14-game seasons. Now they run 16-game seasons. It's a phenomenon. It's unbelievable how good that guy was at football. And he's probably going to come around the corner. Tupac stoked. Bigfoot, obviously, you know what I mean? Tupac stoked. Bigfoot stoked. You know what I mean? And it just seems like a party.
I don't think Bigfoot's stoked to see OJ. I think Bigfoot is a reasonable a reasonable creech.
I think stoked might be a wild term associated
with that.
Okay,
man.
Yeah, but if you're at a swim up Barnes, you're just hanging out or whatever, it'd be pretty interesting if OJ
popped up. I think
this
could cause conflict amongst this island, where like maybe Tupac's hanging out with him and Bigfoot's like, what the fuck, dude? Like, why are you hanging out with that garbage? You are the company you keep. And this makes Bigfoot question him and Tupac's whole relationship that they've been building for all of these years.
I mean, it makes perfect sense in the being that, you know, Bigfoot is the peaceful creature that we know him to be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I kind of apologize for overstepping my bounds. I am moving a little bit quick here. I want to disagree with you, but I can't. That does make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But that being said, so that's one theory. The other theory that, going back to the fact that Ford had OJ killed with one of OJ's close family members or somebody close enough to him, knowing that he's battling cancer, mm-hmm. selling that information. You know what I mean?
He's not even necessarily battling cancer in this scenario. It's that this person and Ford have been working hand in hand, and this is their cover up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see any reason to not believe anything that we've just said to be fact.
Yeah, I think, as I said, at this point, we're just getting the facts sorted.
So we can
count everything that we have said as fact.
Picking
through, you know, untangling this web that has been weaved before us, you know.
Absolutely.
We're picking out the pieces and being like, okay, this goes here. It's like unweaving a blanket, you know, finding you know. Have you seen like the weavers, how they
I've seen weavers.
Yeah. And so it's, you know, you're kind of going through thread by thread and like picking it loose and finding, you know, what thread is, you know, belongs where.
It's the only way that you're going to get to the bottom of it. And that's a wild analogy for like for a red string and kind of, oh shit, we're going down.
Like one of those, you know, in the one of the
comes back
Disney 9/11. Tapestries.
Disney tapestry? That's
we've been watching this like Disneyland doc series, and there's one of them, there's this guy making these big tapestries, or all these workers, and they're weaving them by hand, and it's like these great like scenes from Disney that are hand woven tapestries.
Yes.
And so it's like you see it as a big, you know, you see this tapestry hanging on the wall and it's this beautiful picture.
Yeah.
But then you take one string out one by one.
Yes, you're not going to get to the truth of OJ until you've deconstructed.
Each of those strings represents a thread of truth.
For
you
sure.
Know? And then you kind of all, you have it kind of all before you on, like, I'm imagining a big wall with just each string kind of hanging one by one. And that's when you get the real picture, is when you untangle what we're meant to see.
That's right.
You know, and you have
the Snow White blowing seven dwarves.
It's like it's a classic unweaving of the tapestry scenario.
I 100% agree with that convoluted analogy, and it's fantastic. And I thank you for walking me down that road.
Yeah.
I think at the end of the day, who is the world's supervillain now? You know what I mean? There's a lot of them, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, with OJ, it was such like the easy person to hate or whatever. This guy couldn't walk down the street with Opie and fucking like a murderer yelled at. I like Martin Shkreli. I don't like that fucking guy.
You're going with him too? Yeah, I think he's got the look, right?
Yeah, he's got the look, and he's kind of like doing it from like a Lex Luthor-ish.
And he's trying to
big
be
pharma.
Evil.
Oh,
too.
Yeah, he was on Skanks.
You know, he's leaning
like
into
yeah.
it.
Yeah,
he's like leaning into it, which
is Tucker Carlson's a fucking dork too. I think, you know, if there's a lot of dorks, but I don't know if there's going to be anybody that's like you know what I mean, like that villain that walks amongst us, you know what I mean,
right?
Or,
that,
you know,
tweets crazy. Had you seen some of the shit that OJ had been tweeting recently?
I'm fucking not only tweeting, I follow him on like his social media. He'll do like basically just like videos from the golf course, like, hey everybody,
yes.
This is the juice, and then he'll just give like an opinion on like a sports analysis that nobody gives a fuck or asked for. It's great. It's my favorite. I'm gonna miss it.
He was weighing in, you know, that court case that was going on with that doc series that
yes.
we watched, and the dad was up for trial, and
yeah.
BoJ was giving his opinion, advice to like the guy or whatever. Like, it was absolutely insane.
What you're gonna want to do is doing hand exercises. Make your hand.
Yeah.
I remember when I was in in a like fucking 10th grade math class, because I remember shout out to Terry Jones, who's my teacher. This guy, greatest teacher. He's like, I failed math in grade 9, and then you just I didn't think I was very good at it, and then you just find like a teacher that gets you, you know what I mean, it kind of shows you the way. And then I went on to like figure it out or whatever, and and it would become very good. Great, fantastic man, fantastic teacher. But that motherfucker thinks OJ did it, and I'll never forget this. We were just in class, and so when I'm in the 10th grade, this would be like 2006, you know, I mean, 12 years after this fucking car chase. He basically brought it up because we were talking about a Seinfeld episode where the bra doesn't fit or whatever. And there was like half the class, because I was held back that year or whatever. So I was in this math class with a group of kids that were like below us. And so I said the Seinfeld reference and he loved it. And nobody else knew what we were talking about. So we were trying to school these kids on Seinfeld. And then it became that they didn't know what OJ was. And we were like, oh, shit. So it's like, my perspective is like a grade 10 kid, and then this like older man's perspective, kind of telling these like everybody about this trade. I was losing my mind that they, you know, are 1 year younger than me and don't know what any of this fucking news. And so then my teacher just goes off for so long about like, they make them put the glove on. They make them, and what would you do? What would you do if you were going to put a glove on? You would make your hand as big as it can go. And he just was like explaining this to 30 kids. And at the beginning, I was just like, oh, we're just going to tell them like about what this was. Like, we're just going to give them a history lesson. And it became so fucking biased.
Well, it
became so very funny that I did.
It is a history lesson.
For sure. For sure. But like, opinion aside, he was definitely.
It's not an opinion. It's a
it's not, I mean, in a court of law by a jury of his peers. I'm just saying he beat the case. But that being said, I that was because when this was going on, I was like, you know, 6 years old during this trial or whatever, right? I was more concerned with like Stone Cold Steve Austin, Michael Jordan, all that shit or whatever. My mom was glued to the TV watching this trial, so I remember it kind of like in the periphery. And then as you kind of grow up, you start to, you know, hear the people's opinion on it from years later. You know what I mean? Which is fucking wild. So basically what happened here is that this guy's been bottling this up for 12 years and just exploded on a fucking group of fucking like 12-year-old kids about his thoughts on the OJ murder, which that I will always find funny.
Yeah. Okay, so we have kind of a fun one, to actually a fun discovery I made this week. Ooh. Is that I learned about another mythical creature that has escaped our grasp up till now.
Cryptid news, we love it.
So, Tahoe Tessie, the monster of Lake Tahoe, located both in California and Nevada. I think it's a third in California, two-thirds in Nevada, something like that. Anyways.
You know, they're still in the water.
And, of course, I mean, I don't know why it didn't occur to me why, of course, of a lake, the biggest freshwater lake in the United States or whatever, I don't know why it didn't occur to me that, of course, there is a mythical creature legend that goes with this lake. And this one kind of has a fun backstory.
Very cool.
Tessie, the monster of Lake Tahoe, the state's largest freshwater lake, Tahoe has long been rumored to be home to both an underwater mob graveyard and a huge unknown creature. A story often told about Tahoe is that a few years back, a fisherman trolling off the south shore got his hook caught on something in the deeps. When he finally freed it and reeled his catch back to his boat, he found a well-preserved human ear on the end of the line.
Huh.
Another version of the tale has a fisherman snagging a three-fingered human hand.
So when you see that, immediately you think, you know, Loch Ness-esque creature.
No. They're talking about the mob part of it right now.
Oh, very cool.
According to local legend, the 900-foot deep waters off South Shore served as a dumping place for mob victims from the 1920s to the 1950s. Hundreds of gangsters' corpses are suspended in the depths, they say, preserved from decay and prevented from gas bloating surfacing by the near-freezing deep waters.
Huh.
So pervasive is this tale that many local fishermen refer to the area as the graveyard. And a Tahoe boat mafia execution was featured in the climax of The Godfather Part 2.
Oh, no shit.
Even stranger are the tales of Tessie. Locals maintain that a large, unidentified, serpent-like creature lives in the deepest parts of the lake and usually appears around June in even-numbered years. Very specific. Ooh. Dubbed Tessie in imitation of Loch Ness's Nessie, the beast allegedly appears in Washoe Indian legend and may have first been spotted by 19th century settlers. Tessie made headlines in the San Francisco Chronicle on July 12, 1984, when the paper reported that two women had seen the Lake Tahoe Leviathan a month earlier. Tahoe City residents Patsy McKay and Diane Stavarakas were hiking above the west shore when they spotted the creature swimming in the lake. McKay said the beast was about 17 feet long. She watched it closely and saw it surface three times like a little submarine.
Aww.
Her companion said that the creature had a humped back and seemed to surface in a whale-like lethargic manner.
Interesting.
She was also sure that it wasn't a diver, a log, or a large ripple.
those are the three. You gotta rule out before
imagine
you go to cryptid.
Like seeing something like so fantastic and amazing and someone being like, are you sure it wasn't a ripple?
I would lose my mind. I have like an image in my head of like the most vivid dream that I've ever had, and I was standing. I want to say like in my head, it was kind of like on the like edge of this cliff or whatever. Right. So I'm like looking out, you know what I mean? At the mountains and the world as we know it. And a spaceship came up, and I remember the scale of it was so big that as it kept rising, like it just like dwarfed, you know what I mean? Like me or whatever, basically the size of the moon. It was the wildest thing that like I ever saw in my imagination or whatever, and it stays with me like to this thing. And the fact that like Project Blue Book is going to come and say that was a weather balloon or some shit like that,
right?
You know what I mean? Everybody's trying to discredit good people from what they saw. Hopefully, I mean, obviously this wasn't a dream in their situation, but
yeah.
So but like I do know what you're saying, and like to be called crazy when you did see something. Right. Oh fuck.
2 years earlier, a pair of off-duty Reno policemen had also taken a turn with Tessie. Officers Chris Beebe, and Jerry Jones. Those are good police names.
Chris Beebe and Jerry Jones. They were just water skiing?
We're water skiing.
Just a couple bros being dudes.
In the lake in June 1982 when an unusually large creature swam by them. Yet another story about Tahoe asserts that there's an underground river system that links the lake with Pyramid Lake. Oh, in Nevada. Apparently, the bodies of people who have drowned in Tahoe have surfaced in Pyramid Lake, 50 miles to the north. This phenomenon, however, might be due to the corpse floating over the North Tahoe spillway onto the Truckee River. And then downstream to Pyramid Lake, these corpses are putting in some miles.
Weigh your fucking bodies down, boys. What's
the
going on?
The closest anyone ever came to figuring out Tahoe's mysteries. Oh, the closest anyone to figure out Tahoe's mysteries was in the mid-70s. Famed oceanographer Jacques Cousteau brought a mini submarine to the lake and did several dives in search of the 1,600-foot bottom. He returned to the surface allegedly saying the world isn't ready for what's down there, and to his death refused to release any pictures or data from the expedition. What did the legendary diver find? Pinstripe suit, bullet-riddled corpses bobbing in the dark depths? A colony of living amphibian dinosaurs? Or something even weirder? The answer lies in the chilly depths of Blue Lake Tahoe. So I have a bone to pick with Mr. Cousteau.
Can I jump in here really quick? I don't know anything about history, apparently, because I was always under the impression that, like, Jacques Cousteau, like, was, like, an oceanographer from, like, the 1700s. This guy was around in the 70s? Anybody named Jacques Cousteau is not alive in the past 100 years. That's insane.
Right. Yeah, I'm so confused. As someone who is, like, a famed oceanographer, dedicated his life to exploring the ocean, and then he apparently sees something that, like, completely boggles his mind, but he refuses to share any information of evidence of this with the world.
It seems weird because like his whole job is to share the evidence
exactly.
of what he finds, you know what I mean? So the idea that if he did see something that the world might not be ready for, it's not up to him.
But why wouldn't he kind of put it in like a file and be like, you know, release this after I'm dead or something like that?
I bet that file's sitting in the fucking at the end of Indiana Jones where they kept the fucking Holy Grail and shit. If this could be the case, now they're talking about underwater underground rivers and stuff connecting to, you know, other lakes and stuff like that mm-hmm. on the Earth's surface. Now, we haven't even talked about a passageway into the theoried world, basically in the core of our world.
Right.
You know what I mean? Where Cthulhu and, you know, these kind of, you know, beings, you know, kind of get trapped, right? So let's say a tectonic plate shifts, you know, and this guy now is just alone in mm-hmm. Lake Tahoe, really just looking for his way to get home, right? This, if anything, this is a tragic story.
Yeah, I'm so, I just like, I, because like, obviously Jacques Cousteau is a pretty revered figure these days.
Apparently,
I didn't know this dark spot on his resume where he has went to the depths of Lake Tahoe and then said, no, you guys ain't finding out what I saw down there. You're too simple to understand, and then just never brought it up again. Like, I don't know. I think that is cause for some concern. Not even concern. It's just, like, annoying, you know? Yeah. When someone just does something, and you're like, what the fuck, dude?
It
like, why can't you just be
his
cool?
His whole body of work now means nothing
right?
to me, right?
I mean,
if,
like,
if I
he
see
is
a map
now,
that
like,
Jacques Cousteau, you know, had penned, then it's as good as toilet paper to me.
Exactly. Yeah. His whole body of work is complete nonsense.
Well,
now.
Exactly, right? As soon as you have one blemish on your resume, then I can't.
I have to, the whole thing goes up.
You
in
have
flames.
To hold yourself to a higher standard if you're going to, you know, play in this kind of game here, right?
Yeah.
So, you know.
I mean, like, maybe it's just not translating on the page. Maybe he said it in kind of a joking tone, you know? Maybe it's just like he didn't really see. Maybe it was just a fucking lake, you know? And there's a whole lot of nothing down there. And maybe it's like, the world isn't ready for what's down there. And they're trying to make it sound more like nefarious than it was. Like, we're going to have to roll the tape on this one, I think, before I make a solid judgment.
For
but the way that this is reading, I don't like it.
Yeah, beating that it's a cryptid that, you know, that isn't, like, I mean, popular at all. We're just kind of finding out about it now. This isn't a Mothman or a Chupacabra situation, right? Mm-hmm. This is just... a ripoff of especially for the namesake of Loch Ness, you know, too, right? Nessie.
I
and
think
Tessie.
Homage.
Homage, sure, sure, but it's a bummer in the world of cryptics now that that this creature doesn't have its own identity.
Yeah, so that brings me to my question is that so in the Grand Pyramid of cryptids, of mythical creatures,
sure.
With obviously Bigfoot at the pinnacle.
Of course.
Where does Tessie rank?
I mean, coming into the game late, I gotta put her near the bottom. I mean,
we need to find
gonna,
out more about her for sure.
Absolutely. I don't have enough information, and there's not enough, you know, storied past and things like that, right? We have two lesbians sighted her once from the top of a mountain, and then
right.
and a Jacques Cousteau quote out of context. I don't think that's enough to
we'll have to because I remember
scratch the surface and get up, you know, to the Chupacabra levels and you know,
we'll have
and
to
your
dive
Mothmans,
into like her origin story. But yeah, I would say definitely, you know, below Nessie, below Ogopogo, you
for
know,
sure.
all
Skinwalkers,
those,
all of them. Yeah,
yeah.
I don't think she just
but
doesn't.
I do think she has promise, and so I don't want to put her like right at the bottom because I love a water-based cryptid.
Absolutely.
I am all like I think that's pretty
who
fun.
Do you put at the bottom of the rung then
in like
Your fairies and goblins and
I
warlocks
love fairies,
and things like that, you know,
warlocks maybe no
so that's the matriarchy there.
Yeah, no, I think maybe I don't know. I mean, it's like choosing a favorite child.
It's tough. I'd probably put a parrot.
A parrot? No.
You don't know because like a parrot, they seem like they could be a cryptid with the brain and the ability to mimic and things like that or whatever, mm-hmm. right? So I do think that they're like the one proof that cryptids exist on the world because these ones walk amongst us.
Right. I think maybe the knockoff Bigfoots, like the regional specific. Ones that are kind of
oh, you'll throw like an abominable snowman or a yeti.
No, not those ones that are well established. But I mean, like the ones that we had talked about in previous episodes.
Oh,
that's
sure.
like this guy
yeah.
just like ate all the kids or
yep.
some shit
yep.
like that.
Yep.
And there, what was
well, off the top of my head, I can't really remember.
Yeah.
But I was always under the assumption that they were just you know each you know, region would have its own, you know, name for the, you know, a similar bipedal ape, you know, what I mean, that's running through the forest and stuff. Yeah. So, that being said, I would probably put the ones that were deemed to be dangerous.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
at the bottom, because obviously that's just slander.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think exactly. That's why I think, like, anything branching off of Bigfoot, that the myth around it is dangerous and violent in nature,
sure.
automatically put as unbelievable.
Okay.
And that goes right to the bottom for me, because that goes completely against everything Bigfoot stands for.
100%.
As we know.
Absolutely. Whether you agree to a more down-to-earth approach or interdimensional, same character applies.
Yeah, I think that we chime in, sound off, flashers, in the comments.
Please.
But I think we should maybe actually construct the pyramid of cryptids and kind of rank, or some, if pyramid might not be the best ranking system.
Yeah, like a final four bracket, or how do you want to do this?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That'd be fun.
Yeah,
that'd
we should do a... Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
Yeah, bracket, okay. A kind of tournament style competition for all of our favorite cryptids.
I think Chicago Mothman's going to make it further than we think.
Yeah. But yeah, so with that, with our last 5 minutes,
yep.
We'll get into the album. So I brought in, as I said, another soundtrack. I love revisiting movies from my childhood.
Absolutely. Nothing like nostalgia, baby.
Yeah. And so this was a movie that, one, because it's not uncommon for me to go back and watch these old movies, but this is one that I had not revisited since childhood. And so my memory of it, while, like, once I started, I was like, oh, I remember this whole plot, I remember all the songs. Mm-hmm. But, like, obviously the tone and all of that, my only memory of it was through a child's eyes.
Sure.
And so it came out in 2001, so I would have been 7.
What's the name?
I'm getting there.
Oh, sorry, my fault.
Josie and the Pussycats.
Goddamn
obviously
right.
It's a... absolutely hilarious movie. And I, like, as I said, like, I knew my watching experience of this was going to be good because I'd watched it so many times as a kid. But right off the bat, opening scene of the movie, I was like, oh, this is a full-blown comedy that's kind of meant for adults.
And you paused it, and I'm grateful that you did, because I was blown away. I too, saw the movie when I was a kid, and the only thing that I remember was my friend Scott's stepdad walking in and see what we were watching, and he gave us Die Hard, and then we watched. So I only remember Josie and the Pussycats as the first time I saw Die Hard.
Yeah.
And did not remember a thing about it, but the, you know, the capitalist, you know, undertones, the brainwashing, the just the idea that you're going to use music to sell bullshit to the kids is just a phenomenal premise for a movie.
Yeah.
And the fucking music stands up. The jokes are funny. Alan Cummings rules. It's great.
And it's so funny because, like, watching, like, I had recently the other week rewatched Spice World or whatever, which is almost like a similar tone, almost, in that it's poking fun of it at itself, but it's definitely more geared towards kids.
For sure. Yeah. They're definitely in on the joke from both of them. Yeah.
But I had totally not realized, since I hadn't revisited this film since I was a kid, how, like, legitimately good this soundtrack is, and, like, the Josie and the Pussycats band was, and also the boy band du jour.
Oh yeah, yeah, Backdoor Lover, fantastic song to open a movie with.
And
a children's movie, PG-13. Yeah. I'm your backdoor lover.
Which is amazing. So funny, because I know that I watched this movie 100 times, so I know that not only would my parents have heard this song while I'm watching it, but I probably was going around the house singing it. Like, it's a catchy song.
That's just chef's kiss right there. And, like, the du jour band too, with, like, with Breckenmeyer and Seth Green and Donald Faison. Fantastic.
Yeah.
And the other guy. Nobody knows who the other guy is.
But so I realized that this album was actually we've talked so much about, you know, your formative punk album.
Yes, absolutely.
This album would be my formative punk album.
I can't turn my nose up to that at all. The lyrics are great. If you are listening to this and you are a fan of pop punk music and female fronted bands, or I mean all female bands, I guess, like all the way from Susie and the Banshees to X-Ray Specs, there's a long line of fantastic women in punk rock. You know what I mean, all the way to fucking Tilt, famously we did the episode on that, one of my favorites, Tsunami Bomb, all the way up to the current bands like the Bomb Pops, you know, and Bad Cop. This shit could fit in at a festival with any of them. The music is you know what I mean, it's great. It's it pokes fun, obviously, at like the, you know, what the movie is talking about. Yeah. But like, I'm a punk rock prom queen, brown paper magazine. It's fucking great. You could put that on any 2000s fucking pop punk playlist. I was blown away. I love it a lot.
Yeah, and in true punk album form, 37 minutes long. And
we listened to it twice before we started the episode.
Yeah, it's really great. And so just we don't have as much time as we were planning on, but we'll so the movie basically is a scathing critique on capitalism and consumerism and, you know, about brainwashing kids to buy more things through these types of bands that were hyper popular at the time, like your boy band and like your pop punk band, you know. It's truly brilliant.
Yeah, I think like we were spoon fed like a style. I still wear the same clothes. You could look at the back of Blink-182's Take Off Your Pants and Jacket, and or like the back of any fucking skate punk thing is like a Dickies shorts or like the band t-shirt. Like I was spoon fed things, so that's why I do think that I'm brainwashed, because I was, you know, the individual in my neighborhood. You know what I mean, at the time, like, yes, I was definitely like the different one doing that now, but now as I've grown up, I'm just 33-year-old dude in a band t-shirt that looks the same as everybody else at the show or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So we are individuals in the sense that if you don't like everything that we like, then get the fuck out, you know what I mean, right? So there's a whole lot of interesting things for that, right? Because as soon as something becomes popular, like that's where the shift comes from, I think. When you have money to be made, then capitalist pigs put their fucking hands into it, and then counterculture becomes pop culture.
Well, and this movie is particularly interesting in that it was talking specifically about that teenage demographic. And there's even like a line in the movie where they're like, these are kids that have some income coming in. They're getting their first jobs. Mm-hmm. They're working minimum wage, but they don't pay rent. They don't pay bills. So it's all just expendable, right? Yeah. And it's so funny because this movie would be something that was marketed for me, you know. Not only because I was the age and demographic that would want to watch like a female-led,
for sure,
you know, kind of rom-com with music in it or whatever.
Oh, it's great. Tara Reid, Rosario Dawson, come on.
And
like,
also I loved the Archie comics and Betty and Veronica,
for sure.
Like,
oh,
I
Parker Posey,
hundreds
too,
of them. And so this movie was literally like spoon fed to me, and like watching it, like my memories of it, not aside from like the plot and the music and all that, so many of my memories of it were like, oh my god, like I wanted that outfit so bad,
for sure.
Whatever. So obviously all of like the actual message of the film would have gone right over my head as a 7-year-old.
That's the,
and I was just
it.
Like, oh my god, like I want that. Yeah. I want that. Yeah. And like I definitely had like the fucking pussycat ears.
For
like
sure.
I fucking, and you know, that they sold, you know, from this movie, were selling fucking, you know, pussycat merch and all of that shit,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Which is hilarious that, you know, this would have been something that was spoon fed to me in that way. But yeah, I was thinking about it because these days I don't buy a lot of stuff for myself without feeling like really guilty about it.
Yeah.
And so the stuff that's kind of because we've reached a whole new level of marketing, obviously, with social media ads and our phones, you know, listening to everything. So all of my targeted ads these days, like if it's something for me, I'll be like, oh, that's cool, I want that, but I'll never buy it. But where they get me is when they market anything for our cat.
Yes.
You,
like they've found the thing. You don't buy shit for yourself.
Yeah,
but
they'll be like, there'll be something, like literally, I keep stuff in my Amazon cart for weeks before I like pull the trigger and order it. But then if I see scrolling through Instagram and I see like a scratching post that's in the shape of like a record player that makes your cat look like a DJ, then I'm like, I'm going to order this immediately. 100%. And Yoki needs it.
Well, definitely. I mean, fucking Coachella's coming, right? So like, I mean, let's get her on the lineup. I think that like there, if something's being like marketed towards me, like I'm definitely like easy. Like I am the expendable, you know, income or whatever. Males age like 15 to 34 is like a huge demographic for just buying bullshit or whatever. And especially at the age now that you can afford things and they're going to remarket and sell my childhood back to me with like, you know what I mean? Like a rebooted Nintendo systems and you know what I mean? All this different shit or whatever. Right. X-Men 97 coming out and a whole run of toys and everybody's mad that Magneto has like a new costume. And in your head, you're just like, no, they just want to fucking sell two different action figures. Right. Like it's a Mick Foley in the WWE was Cactus Jack, Mankind and Dude Love. Cause he's awesome. But also, now you have three fucking action figures. Right. It's not a dummy, right?
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, that's where I think it's like up to you as like the consumer, you know what I mean, to kind of pump the brakes on it. And I remember when I was like when I found skateboarding, it seemed like so pure in its own thing. And then like almost immediately, like as early 2000s or whatever, so like it was like not popular and then it was just like booming or whatever. So like as soon as like I kind of found it, then it was being mass marketed to everybody. That movie Grind came out and that Bam Margera was all over MTV and you know Jackass and all that stuff. So like the thing that like I just found that was like cool and our own, they were now Nike has a team and Adidas has a team and they were, and now they're like, you know, leading the skateboard footwear technology, blah blah blah, all the bullshit or whatever. They've established themselves in the world of skateboarding now as legitimate, but at the time I remember us all being like, oh fuck this, you know what I mean? And it was that same kind of feeling that, you know, Josie and her Pussycats went through when, you know what I mean, you can kind of like you're peeking behind the curtain or whatever, and like if something's cool then it's fucking cool, but then when it's like mass marketed and shoved down your throat and then everybody at school is wearing the same thing, so like we banned against like DC shoes and like a lot of different things or whatever, right? I went to like thrift stores to make my clothes like more punk or whatever, to like, you know, be different, because we were the different kids wearing, you know, Dickies and black t-shirts, and now every fucking asshole's wearing, you know, or whatever, right? So you can kind of start to see that as soon as the same thing happens with gayness, you know what I mean? Gays were doing like Stonewall riots and counterculture and their own thing or whatever, right? And then now when it comes to like pride events and stuff like that, everybody has a rainbow flag on and everybody's trying to capitalize and make money off it too, right?
Yeah.
So it's just that, you know, that thing is like, how much are you willing to take, or how much are you willing to let slide, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is like it's just like an ongoing joke that these days with big companies just getting behind whatever that month is, whatever social movement that month is.
Absolutely.
So whether it be Black History Month or, you know, Gay Pride or, you know, Women's History Month or whatever it is, and
they
that
fly the flag for that
exactly
immediate time, and then they fucking rip it
out.
They'll,
you know, turn
the
their turn their logo rainbow or turn it pink or put a fucking do-rag on
for the allotted time. And then as soon as that fucking, it's so funny because like it's a like corporations don't leave the Christmas tree up until January or whatever, right? Like as soon as Christmas is over, they throw that fucking thing in the trash, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, then they'll come back, you know, next year or whatever, and you know what I mean, put, you know, I don't know, two guys kissing on the advertisement again or whatever.
Right.
They would never do that in the other 11 months of the year, because you know what I mean, it's all about optics and it's all bullshit and it's all brainwash.
Yeah.
Yeah. For anybody wanting a good brainwash song, check out The Bath of Least Resistance by NOFX. Ooh, could you please put my head in a tub?
But yeah, I recommend first watching the movie, because it really is like
it's great.
A treat. It's so fucking funny and just like a great movie. But
use it and then destroy capitalism.
But also, if you don't have time for that or don't feel like watching the movie, listen to the album, because it actually is really good.
It slaps, yeah.
And there's two DuJour songs at the end that are just an absolute treat.
Backdoor lover, fucking get involved.
Yeah.
Get your shit together. Try to shake the cobwebs off and don't let the man control you.
Let us know for first round bracket picks, who you want to see in there. We're gonna have the classics, obviously. Bigfoot.
Obviously, a number one seed with Bigfoot for sure. Obviously, I mean, you know, but we're gonna, you know, there's a whole lot of work to be done here,
and we're gonna figure out, yeah, what's a fair way to do this bracket system other than just putting our favorites through. We're gonna need some input here. This is gonna be a joint.
Yeah, no. If you don't help us, then there's just gonna be us picking favorites, and this is gonna be it's basically just gonna be us saying Bigfoot's our favorite. get involved. Yeah. Get into the comments. Like us and subscribe us. And if you see us in the street, say what's up.
Yeah. All right. Peace.